and welcome to a new episode of Be a Fan. It is a break week for the LCS. We had a crazy week three. It's not so much crazy. It really was a very fast week three when all the hype built up around week one and two with, you know, some of the series going three games. But we'll have more of that, those thoughts tonight. I invited a friend, special guest, who we encounter in the Oracle Elixir Discord. Red, how are you doing?
All right. Thank you for asking. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I always enjoy the banter and you all have in that Discord, and I figured we got a good chat about League, and so I'm glad that you took up the invite and being here to break down the happenings in LCS, in the League of Legends esports world. Before the show even started, we talked about one of the big announcements that just recently dropped, and it has big implications and a lot more speculations because Riot really just like to drop news without really giving us the thorough, you know, details of what they are thinking, how they're planning. It's almost like, oh, we'll drop this, you guys get to chat and speculate and make up all kinds of shit about it, and then, you know, they're gonna come blindside us with another news. But let me just touch on that with you, because I'm running out of breath. So tell us, walk us through, wow, I'm jumping way far ahead. Let me introduce you in first. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
No, you're
what
fine.
What got you into League of Legends, League Esports, and let's go with that.
Sure. I'm up there in age, turning 33 next month. So in terms of esports age, I'm literally ancient and should never
Fellow
be
boomer.
Playing a video game. Yeah. So I got into League just because it was kind of getting popular at the time. I wasn't in the beta. I got in, I want to say it was late season one. I don't know exactly what champion it was, but it was just, League is free to play. At the time, I think it was Dota 2 wasn't out yet, so not everyone wanted to download or own Warcraft 3 to then go into Dota 2, Dota 1 lobbies. And at the time as well, what happened was there was no MMR system for Dota, so people ran this bot. But the problem is that the admins who made lobbies could just ban you from ever getting, the bot would auto detect banned people and just kick them. Be IP banned, basically. Well, I think it was username banned, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you just had a bad game and the person, the admin didn't like you, they would just add your name to the ban list, and then you couldn't play Dota ever again on an official map because there was it was a very weird system at the time. This happened, I don't know, probably 2007 to 2009-ish. So I think that was when Dota 1 was a serious esport in a sense, not as big as at the time Call of Duty or Counter-Strike, but it was certainly big at the time. I think what was TI1 2010? Is that when that was?
I wouldn't be able to remember that far
it
back.
It might be 2012. It was 2010 was TI1. All right, so yeah, 2010 was when Dota 1 got officially TI1 might have been Dota 2. I don't remember now, but anyways, so because Dota 1 was so hard to kind of get into, one, if you were ever blacklisted, you were done, and two, you had to pre-download the map updates before you could get invited. The boss would also auto kick you if you didn't have the most updated version of the game. So League was an easier MOBA to get into. This is before or at the same time as Heroes of New Earth, but Heroes of New Earth was a very lesser known game, I would say, for
smaller company.
So I got into the game and started playing with just friends that I met through I actually don't even know where I met them. It's just so long ago now, you know, that was 14 years ago. But I know I met people, but I think it was through a mutual friend. It might have been through Skype. We had Skype back then.
Yes.
There wasn't Discord.
Discord didn't exist.
It was either Ventrilo, but in 2010 was when Skype hit its apex. 2010 to 2012 was when Skype, because Microsoft bought Skype for $5 billion, whatever it was. It was crazy. Because what it was is, before Skype, we all went on MSN Messenger.
Yes.
Right? That was the big one. We're all on MSN Messenger.
Messenger, AOL. Yeah.
You could cam on Messenger. You couldn't cam on AIM, right?
No, so right.
People use Messenger, like the grown-ups use Messenger.
Messengers.
You could voice,
that's right.
Cam on Messenger. But then Skype kind of took over Messenger because you didn't have to have separate, you know, instant messaging windows for each of your people. It was all contained on one client. You could just click on the person's name and you could type to them. It was the prototype for what Discord is now. So
right.
I know I met people and talked to them on Discord and played League with them. I just don't know where I initially met them at.
You were ahead of your time, because that's just like talking to people that you've never met in real life. And that was not when we do things back then.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't originally a nerd. I played baseball growing up for like 13 years. but one of my mom's cousin's son gave me his old Super Nintendo, and it was all just basically downhill from there, you know?
You grew up in this SNES era. Same year, man.
Well, I was born in 91, which was the year that Super Nintendo came out. So by the time I was, you know, 6, 7, or 8, it was pretty old. And I think, it wasn't too long before that the PS1 came out in 2001. Mm-hmm. So the PS1 probably came out in like 94, 95, I want to say.
So correct.
I was pretty late into the 64-bit era, the PS1 and 64. I didn't own those consoles, but I did get a PS2 on launch day. I did own an N64 before that, but like I got it like late into the life cycle. So I kind of just had like a couple of the big games, like Mario 64, Donkey Kong,
crap like that,
you know. But PS2 was like my first like console that my parent got me. My first console. That was 2001.
Yes, turn of the millennium. That's when all those Final Fantasy X, all of that came out.
Yeah. Fun fact for us to feel old. The PS2 is as old to us now as the Atari 2600 was when the PS2 released.
No. Oh. All right.
Yeah. 23 years ago, the PS2 came out.
It might almost just be a handful of people that understand what we're talking about at this
point. Yes. almost a quarter century ago. Yeah. So. Going back to that, like, I don't know, I just became a gamer at that point. But back in especially the early 2000s, playing video games was seen as like a waste of time. You're rotting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the equivalent of what parents said about watching TV in the 80s. It just instead of caring about TV, it started caring about video games. It's the exact same transition.
how the world works. Nothing's new. yourself late season one.
Yep. So I started playing the game, and then I wasn't really watching League Esports. Probably two reasons why. One, it was barely like the client didn't advertise it at all because there was no way for them to at the time. Right. And two, I didn't like visit the official League forums, which, by the way, people might not know, League used to have official forums. They deleted those. Season 8, I want to say. They got deleted. But so League had official forums. A lot of game studios still do. Like Blizzard still has official forums. I think Activision still has official forums. But League did too. So that's where a lot of the core discussion for the game was at the time. Because, I mean, the Reddit existed, but back in Season 1, 2, and Season 3 probably, Reddit wasn't big yet. Like, Dig was bigger than Reddit at the time.
Mm.
Also, most of your audience probably has no idea what Dig is either. Nope. So that's okay. Yes.
Yep.
But basically, Dig was the exact same thing as Reddit, except less streamlined, I would say.
Mm.
But I want to say it had some kind of drama with its admin team, and so Reddit was created as an alternative, and then it just became bigger than Dig.
Yeah.
None of the people I played with watched League Esports, and there was no advertising for League Esports. So I got into it really in Season 1 World Championships, because that became like advertised, right? That was something that like spread by word of mouth, like, oh, all these teams are going to come and compete against each other. So that was the start of my actual fandom, because the team that I ended up cheering for at season one was Rock Solid.
Oh.
And wow. Yeah, for those who don't know, that was a hilarious team. Names that no one would expect at the time, but at the time it was Skara. It had I'm a Cutie Pie, Locust, Void Boy, and Jet, I believe. So basically it was the original Dignitas roster, but yes, they just were known as Rock Solid at
Rock Solid before they were acquired. Yep.
Yeah. But they had like if I recall, they had like other subs at the time as well that weren't necessarily
as well known, right?
Yeah. I see. But I mean, back then, because there was no professional playing, like you would have guys come and play for you for like 2 days at a random LAN. You know, like, oh, like, I mean, I'm sure people know this because there was a recent documentary that G-Bay did on Dignitas. But like, Void Boy was playing pro league at like age like 15. So wow. He was still doing school. Mm-hmm. And so, but there were a lot of times he couldn't make tournaments for Dignitas. So he would, so like, they would have just like random top lane subs constantly just to go do this one tournament. Because back then, the only way of making money was to, there were in season two, there were two different circuits. There was Gopher Lulz, and then there was the TSM circuit. Mm-hmm. So essentially, they were like weekly tournaments that you played for literally $100. You played for $100 a week, which so your team made $400 a month if you won everything. And then I think the TSM circuit was later in the year. And they, I think they were offering $1,000 a week.
Mm.
But hilariously, TSM won all of those because we're getting kind of ahead of the game. But TSM stayed in NA in season two when CLG and Curse and all of them went to OGN Winter to compete in OGN. So TSM just ran the NA circuit for like 6 months or whatever, 3 months really. But yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, I was an OG Dignitas fan. Back then, though, too, you didn't really know about orgs, like you didn't know the people behind the name. So like OD, everyone knows now for Dignitas, he's one of the scummiest owners in esports history, unfortunately. Yeah. He's not a good person in terms of the history of League or the history of esports in general. But even back then, people probably have heard this meme but don't know where it originates. But the first thing that started souring me on Dignitas was the fact that the story came out, I want to say it was either late season two or going into LCS, where it came out that OD was paying Dignitas.com site writers in peripherals. So like mouse pads, desk mats and stuff like that. So he wasn't actually giving them real money. Giving them Dig merch. Like he'd give them like a hoodie and a mouse pad as payment for writing huge articles about his esports teams. Right. But also back then the landscape was different. People didn't see writing articles on an esports org website as like real
jobs,
right. Well, yeah, of course you're not getting paid to write an article for a website. Like, what are you talking about? You know, like people think that people wouldn't think about it now, but even back in 2010 to 2012, like the internet was still pretty new. Like, yeah, it was old in a sense that like the 90s is when the internet became really big, but it was still new in terms of like how we viewed it culturally.
Yes.
The idea of making money online through the internet, paid for doing things for people through the internet without any kind of contract, that kind of stuff was very new back then.
Yes.
So
yeah.
So my fandom started with Dignitas, with Rock Solid originally. And that continued through until the end of season four in LCS. So season four would have been 2014. Personally, in my life, I've stopped being single and found a partner. So what happened is I moved across the country here in the United States and settled down and kind of started building a life. And at that point, I kind of didn't have the time or the inclination to kind of follow League Esports. So I kind of just took a break from it at that point. So.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
But also, luckily for me, I kind of fell out of care as well, because in season four, Skara left for the summer split, and then at the end of the summer split, I'm a cutie pie left Dignitas as well. So at that point, like, all the original people who were on Dignitas, you know, that a lot of ex-Dignitas or current Dignitas fans remember from that season 2 and 3 days were all gone at that point. So there wasn't really any personalities left on the team. And it's also a good thing that I got off that bandwagon early, because, boy, if you look at the history of Dig's play starting in season 5 and 6, it was absolutely atrocious. And then, of course, Dignitas is the only legacy org and only active LCS org to ever be relegated. They actually got relegated out of the LCS.
Oh, man. Wow.
So they had to buy back in. They bought, right. Not the next summer, spring split, the following summer split, they bought in the team that promoted. So they bought in. And then League went to franchising.
Yep.
And when League went to franchising, they declined Dignitas's spot. So they had to buy back in again, which is when they bought Clutch Game. Clutch Gaming.
They had to wait for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had to buy back in twice, because they, one, they sucked, and two, Riot was like, no, we're not going to let OD be a franchise partner. Because after Dignitas got declined is when OD sold Dignitas to the Sixers. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. And I think he's still in the esports world. He like works in, he's on some company in Europe now. He's like their chief gaming officer or whatever for some esports org. They're not league related as far as I know. I think they're like in like smaller esports.
Gotcha. But once he's out of the way, Dig is like, welcome back.
Well, they had to buy in, but yeah. Right,
they had to buy in.
But by that time, so Dig bought Clutch, I think, in 2019. And I started getting back into League in 2020, but I view Dig as essentially like a brand new team. It's
completely
different, like it's not the Dig that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not like, especially because like essentially the Dignitas that was coming in was just another team just with the Dig name on it, right? Because like now I know a lot of the staff left, like for instance, Andrew Barton and Empire left to go to EG at this time, but like a lot of the upper management from Clutch just stayed into going into Dignitas, right? So like it was just the same people from Clutch. So essentially it was like if I was a Dig fan, I'd become a Clutch fan kind of thing. So like I kind of waited to see what team kind of stood out to me, and then initially it was FlyQuest. That's what my current fandom is. But then at the end of 2020, at the time, we don't know this, but in 2020, they let go of their entire Worlds qualifying roster that went to back-to-back finals.
Yes.
So that, to me, I was like, oh, great. I picked an org that's doing the exact same crap that Dignitas did back
it's
in.
It's like it's happening all over again.
Yeah,
oh,
so
my God.
I was like, so in the spring of 2021, which is when I joined the Oracle's Elixir Discord and kind of actually got in the esports scene, like officially, like actually getting myself to like talk to people who are inside the circle instead of being an outside observer. My first, I actually was a 100 Thieves fan. I rooted for 100 Thieves in 2021 spring in the Discord, which is also the first year that Papa Smithy was general manager. Shout outs to the man. What happened there is basically that they were doing great. And they started doing really bad because they were, in my opinion, at least, they were picking comps that didn't fit the players that they signed. Mm-hmm. And then they benched Damonte for Ryoma.
Oh, man.
And then I was like, it's happening a third time, man. Because I mean, Damonte is one of my favorite players of all time. He's one of like everyone's. Like, Damonte is like North America to the core, right? Like, he like bleeds North American League of Legends. He's so great. So after that happened, I was like, I went back to FlyQuest, and that's because of like, you know, the initial stuff was, you know, the environmentalism, Trisha as a CEO, I just wanted to have stability. And I was pretty sure that what Fly was cooking in 2021, it was it wasn't the Kui yet. So it would have been in the top lane.
Let me bring that up.
Yeah, it was in the jungle, and then it was.
I remember it was a fairly not like it was an average top lane. I want to say
It might have been Kumo again, but I don't remember. I don't think it was Kumo, but it might have been. Oh wait, no, I'm silly. 2021 summer was when they had the C9 team. So it was Licorice, Pat Palafox. Mm-hmm.
Licorice wasn't as good as he is right now back then. Well, I have to remember.
After last Friday, he might be just as good. Who knows?
You don't believe in him? Okay, fine.
I think that he on Golden Guardians, he was a product of a well coached team. I would say. Also, it was a very advantageous meta for him and River. Mm-hmm. Essentially, Licorice could kind of sit on tanks and just kind of chill, right. And then River would play Xin Zhao and Jarvan and just run around permaganking.
Just
permagank Gory, permagank Stixxe, and then hope for the best. That was kind of their team, which, I mean, and honestly, that kind of comp in that meta worked really well because just the style they were going for. Like, they just had a good read, I think, on certain metas. Like, Stixxe was the only person picking Tristana as an AD carry at the time. Even when she was a mid laner, he would just play her bot, and they won, I think, almost every game that she was a AD carry. They just kind of recognized that push power kind of is all that matters in League at the time of that meta. So, I went back to Fly in summer 2021, and I've been a strong diehard fan ever since.
They went on the up and up. I mean, they had some pretty good rosters that we get excited about. We don't talk about what happened last year, though.
Still, 2022 was the first year that they signed Takui. So it was Hoodie Dodo and Takui. And they had, at the time in spring, it was Kumo. And then summer, it was Philip. And then they had Johnson and Aphromoo. So that's the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that team was seen as an improvement on the Cloud9 team, right? So yes. You replace Dreams with Aphromoo. You get that veteran voice. Mm-hmm. You replace Licorice. Well, you didn't really replace. Golden Guardians bought Licorice for more than Fly bought Licorice for from C9. Mm-hmm. So they just made money on him. Mm-hmm. That's the report. I don't have like a source for that, but that it was reported I think it was Nick Fan said that they weren't even thinking about selling Licorice, but then Danan came to them and gave them an offer they couldn't refuse. Mm. So which sounds like to me that they paid way more than what Fly paid for.
Was willing,
they made money on him essentially. And then you replace Palafox with Takui, which at the time people were still really high on the potential of Palafox. But that's also when I kind of got involved in the esports scene. So I'm also like in the Flight Check Discord. And for those who don't know, Flight Check is the fan podcast for FlyQuest. They do an episode every Monday during seasons as well as during international events. So feel free to check them out, everybody. They are Flight Check. Flight Check Crew.
Yes, Knox is a frequent visitor of this pod. Love the man.
Of course.
So
So at the time we were doing a lot of like fan discussion about Takui, and I know that me and Knox went back and forth because we did a lot of VOD review. Well, how good is Takui actually? We were comparing him directly to Palafox, right? Because people still felt that Palafox kind of got a raw deal on FlyQuest 21 because the team was pre-dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. Our coach everyone hated, that was Kanani. Literally everyone in NA hates that guy. Ooh. So Palafox to this day still says that he's the worst coach he's ever had, and that's why he hated FlyQuest as an org so much, and why he didn't want to come back with us in 22 even though we were replacing our coach. Like,
yeah, they both left at the same time.
Yeah, like Kanani soured him so much that he was like, I'm done with this org. Mm. Which, I understand too. Like, sometimes you just can't stand to be around somebody, even if they're gone. You can't be in the place they were before. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But so I remember distinctly like looking at like the hard stats, and that for Palafox and Takui, whenever they were ahead, they both really got ahead. They use leads very well and push that advantage. The difference was on 21 FlyQuest and 21, I want to say he was on Team Go. when Palafox got behind, he never really found avenues to get back ahead or to what seemed to be, at least as a team, push their, try to claw back their advantage. Whereas Takui on Team Go tended to, even when behind, found avenues to get leads again or to equalize the game state. So I was pretty excited about 22 because you had Jose Diodo, who I thought, and still to this day still think, is an excellent LCS quality jungler. And then you had a rookie mid laner coming in who had a lot of what I considered good fundamentals how to play the mid game. Then you have your veteran support in Aframu, and then he's being reunited with Johnson from Dignitas, and that was the last time. Well, I mean, depends on how you view the split right now with Dignitas being 1 and 2, but the Dardox, Aligo, Johnson, Aframu dig was the last time Dig's been relevant pretty much since season 3.
Wow.
Unless you specifically count Clutch Gaming because they went to Worlds. So if you count the last year of Clutch them going to Worlds, then fine, sure, they're relevant there. But as an org, Dig hasn't been relevant. Between then and season 3 at all. So it felt like, okay, they're kind of cooking. I mean, no one viewed them as, oh, we're going to win the LCS, but everyone viewed them the same way that people view, I don't know, probably Dignitas now. Like, oh, they're a team that could push for 5th, 4th, maybe get that 3rd seed for Worlds, right? They're not winning, but they could be a threat to sneak in the playoffs and catch one team off guard and make Worlds, right?
Yeah, correct. That's the narrative around them anyways.
Yeah, so in 22 spring, they did, I don't know, I feel like they did okay.
That was a time they brought in the Koreans, right? Prince and Vikla.
22? No, that was 23.
Oh, that was 23.
So in spring of 22, they finished, I want to say middle. Oh no, okay, that was the year they just squeaked into the playoffs. They were 9-9, and they played Golden Guardians and beat them for the tiebreaker. Which, by the way, in 21 summer, we finished 9th because we tied with Golden Guardians and they beat us for the playoff tiebreaker.
For playoff tie, yes.
There is a history between Fly and Golden Guardians because going into 22, Golden Guardians had Licorice.
Yeah.
So there was some, like, to this day, there is a little bit of blood between, well, not anymore because Golden Guardians isn't anymore, but
he's gone. They're gone. That was your, what we had was something like a rivalry or something. Like
yeah, history, I mean, at least here. People don't think about it, but lower tier teams can have rivalries too.
Yes.
And FlyQuest and Golden Guardians commonly were fighting each other for like the last playoff spot or for seeding in playoffs. So 2021, Golden Guardians beats Fly in a tiebreaker. 2022 spring, Fly beats Golden Guardians for that tiebreaker, which ended up not mattering because Golden Guardians got 3-0'd by C9 and Fly got 3-1'd by EG. So who got what was irrelevant. That was the split that EG with Danny and JoJo won the whole thing and went to MSI, lost every game to G2, and then got stomped out of MSI playoffs.
Yeah.
So summer was seen as the year that Fly might see significant improvement because, okay, you've had a split with Jose and Takui getting time together. Takui has a split of experience now. They replaced Kumo, who was a very clear weakness, with Phillip.
Yes.
And a lot of people might not remember, but going into the beginning of spring, Fly did really well. They
started hot.
They beat Golden Guardians. I know they lost to Immortals and EG, but losing EG is expected.
Right.
But then they beat CLG and they beat TL. And then they beat Dig, and then they beat C9. So it was like, oh my god, this team is like for real. But
you're putting it together, it looked like
it felt like it. But you know, towards the end, what ended up happening is, I mean, like any team, you feel like there might be some cracks in the arm. But also, that was kind of that was when it was pretty clear that the parity in the LCS is kind of coming together. Like the middle teams are all pretty equal skill.
Yes. Because
that was the first year that CLG was the Dukla Contracts, Palafox, Luger, and Poom team. So they were pretty good. C9 was the Fudge Blabber, Jensen, Berserker, Sven team. So that was, I mean, that team won summer, but in the regular season, they were really bad. But they got better as the season went on.
As the season went on.
100 Thieves was the Someday Closer, Abenage, FBI, Huhi team. That's the team that would go
Golden Guardians.
They bought the Golden Guardians core. And then added Abenage.
Yes.
And they kept Sunday. Yeah, same thing. Yeah. And then but that team would go to back-to-back-to-back finals.
Mm-hmm.
And they had EG who had just won. So like it was pretty clear that Fly wasn't gonna ever win the split, but all the teams were actually pretty close in skill, and Fly was just the worst of the good teams.
Yeah.
Because underneath them was like TSM, Golden Guardians, Immortals, and Dignitas, and all those teams just stunk.
That's right. Top heavy, and then
Golden Guardians signed Pride Stalker and Leader from EU. What are we doing? Right?
They were the meme like 9th place or 10th place team.
And then Immortals was that was the first split of Kinvi, who had replaced Xerxes. So that was the revenge Kinvi, POE, River. I'm sorry, Lost and Ignar. That team stunk.
Right.
And then roster was the that was the roster where they brought back Gamsu because Dig won Proving Grounds in spring. So they brought back Gamsu. They had Gamsu, River, Blue, and Neo.
Oh my gosh.
I think it wouldn't have been Spawn to start out.
It spawned and they changed to Neo.
And also they benched Gamsu for Hoon. So that team was...
Oh, Lord. I remember absolutely that. Awful. I remember that. Oh.
Yeah. And then that was the last split that TSM even made playoffs, which was... They had Soul, Spica, Maple, Tactical, and Chai.
Oh, they had Soul at one point. I completely forgot.
Yeah. He came up and played for him.
Right.
Playoffs, unfortunately, was a different beast because there was a lot of hype around FlyQuest. Mm-hmm. You know, people thought, hey, they could maybe, again, it's a team that you might surprise one team and sneak into Worlds. They got 3-1 by TL.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost 3-2 to TSM in loser's bracket.
Yeah.
So that was hard. That was the beginning of people, you know, when a team starts to get hot and then they kind of flounder. This happens to any team that's starting to slowly get better. They're going to crash and burn.
Yep.
The teams that are above them start making fun of them because hey, you know, we're at the top, we've had our victories, look at you, you're struggling, just get better, noob, kind of thing, you know. So that's to this day that kind of fraud quest kind of thing where Fly fans think they're good and then they flounder in the playoffs kind of started.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to 2023, which I'm sure Nox has gone over extensively with you.
Yeah. They came in with so much expectation and the signing. I've been following LCK throughout and I know the names, Prince, Fikla, all that. I had great hopes. You know, their spring was competitive. I just don't have no idea what happened in summer.
Well, a couple people have kind of hinted at it. So Ayla talked about it and Spica talked about it. They're the only ones that have really talked about it so far. It sounded like Prince and Impact would argue all the time. Just nonstop arguing and yapping in games and in reviews. What they were talking about and arguing, no one really knows. It's hard to say. But from what people have said in Discords, like team managers and stuff, it sounds like when you play with Prince, he's expecting you to play around him, right? And what I'm thinking is that this is all conjecture, speculation. Impact wanted like jungle and support roam timings based on him. Like, hey, look right here, I have a really really good timer. If support comes with me, we can invade enemy red, steal enemy red, and get tempo on Herald spawn or something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But this is just conjecture. I'm assuming Prince said, "Well, I don't care about that timer because if he's with me, I can pressure bot lane and get 5 CS lead or whatever." You know, so kind of stereotypical bot laner mentality. Lane, right. Yeah, like I need the support on my lane because I need to get that 5 CS lead. I need to stomp my lane opponent. I don't care about top lane kind of thing, you know?
It don't matter.
It sounded like, too, from all accounts, Vikla was just never talked, period, and neither did Sika. So Vikla didn't know that he had to fight for himself to get, like, to get support roam timing to his lane. So what ended up happening is teams towards the end, especially in summer, would just really heavily push on Vikla's lane because he was never covered, because presumably all of the team's arguments and planning was around timings around Prince or not Prince, as opposed to a more fluid, people just go to where the game state tells you to go. It sounded like Fly was trying to hard force timers instead of naturally, like, feeling the game and then going to where your gut tells you to go, kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I view a lot of the differences between really, really good teams in League and, like, mid-tier teams.
Yeah.
Mid-tier teams can be really good coach. The coach can tell you, in this game state, do this. In this game state, do this, etc. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is the really good teams, they'll follow those coachings, but they also have that gut instinct.
Right.
Actually, if I do this instead, it's a risk reward, but if I hit the reward, we just win the game right now. We just win the game. The game's over. So you'll see that a lot. This split is actually an extreme example. So back in the day, it used to be that LCK games were very long, methodical, low kill, very technical. Teams would just kind of push and pull on the map. And if a team got advantage, the other one would concede and go away because they knew they couldn't fight. And that was seen as a good thing, which back then it was true. And then like LPL in Europe was seen as, like, chaotic, scrappy, fight constantly. They're not playing League the right way. They're just really chaotic because at least for China, it felt like the plan was, if we can make the map as chaotic as possible, then LCK can't play their slow, methodical game.
Correct. They want to bring in you into their pace and their chaos, and they thrive in that.
So but now,
for a while.
Yes, but now it's the inverse. The good teams play fast and loose and chaotic because they thrive in it. The bad teams, like Immortals and Shopify, play a very, very slow game. Mm-hmm. And if you get like advantage in river, they just concede the dragon. They go, right. Nope, okay,
nope, we're not going there. Yep,
that's fine. And it's crazy to think about, because, I mean, anyone watching can watch the first 3 weeks of Immortals and Shopify. Their kill games are insanely low. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was when TL played, when C9 played Shopify, C9's up 10,000 gold, and there's 3 kills.
Barely any kills, yeah.
It's like, what
the heck? It's a drag on, we're going back.
And it's not because C9 is, like, playing the LCK style. It's literally that Shopify just doesn't want to fight. Like, okay, we will concede everything and hope that you just mess up. And then guess what? They never mess up. They force you to fight a Baron. They ace you, grab Baron, in the game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where a lot of good and bad teams kind of split, is that the good teams they have that good gut where they can just play really fast and loose and really understand the game in a deeper format than just, well, in this game state, I should do this. Kind of like the bad teams go through a flow chart, whereas the good teams just know. If I do this, even though it might not be the right play, it's the winning play.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of difference for me on teams right now.
So you're saying it's more pronounced in this split than before?
Well, this meta. We have so many, a lot of meta champions are really good at pushing turrets.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, like, Tristana right now, Ezreal's really good right now, Kalista's really good right now. Corki is good at pushing turrets. You have a lot of champions that are really good at just going up and hitting a turret and it dies really fast. So the teams that are really good at, like, capitalizing on you playing too slow or too tight just can take your objectives really fast. I mean, the AP junglers kill Baron and Dragon in 10
just
seconds.
Delete that. Oh, man.
Yeah, so if you're not prepared, or if you're just going through your flow chart and then you're, you know, it was when NRG took, no, who was it? I don't know if it was the NRG. Yeah, it was. It was the game that NRG beat Fly. Contract was on Zyra, and he would just alt Baron on spawn with like 10 plants or whatever. And it would melt literally in 5 seconds. But Fly was in that game too. Fly won the series 2-1. Mm-hmm. But in that game too that Fly lost, Fly was behind early, and it felt like they were too afraid to try to push and get an advantage. They kind of were waiting to see if NRG would make a mistake.
Right.
And they did, like, midway through the game, but then Fly made one back. And like I said, and then at that point, again, Contrast can just kill Baron on spawn, kill Elder in 15 seconds on spawn. And so, like, that's kind of where it's really pronounced right now, like I said, because things die. Like, champions fast. Don't die that fast.
No,
objectives are what are dying really fast right now. Like, faster than we've ever seen before.
This is why, you know, Enchanters and Jungle is so such a high priority for a lot of teams. You see the brand, you see the Zyra.
And it's also why Enchanter supports are not meta, because the game is, right now at least, team fights are important, but it seems like what's more important is playing around and taking objectives. And so a tank support gets you the ability to like zone better. You put Leona or Nautilus like right at Dragon, you know, near the river, near Dragon, and they will just into themselves because you're going to kill Dragon in 15 seconds. So Enchanters don't help you kill the Dragon faster.
But
the tanks will help you defend the zone, so you kill that Dragon really fast. That's what it feels like right now. Enchanters and solo queue are really strong. It's because solo queue doesn't play the game correctly.
Right, but they're not as coordinated.
Yeah, in pro, it feels like you have to have really strong frontline zone control, so your AP jungler and your Tristana mid can just melt things at lightning speed. Like, we've seen, it's not true in LCS, but I think in the LPL, like, maybe not now, but I know early on, there was something crazy, like, whenever a team took Baron, the game ended within that Baron.
Right. Right.
Like, consistently.
Baron, and they just push in. And
end the game. Yeah. Because they know, like, where to attack and, like, what their champs do and how to push the tempo with the Baron buff. Yeah. Whereas on LCS, it can sometimes take, like,
they don't know how to three close out games.
Yeah, it takes, like, three Baron buffs to get a game going, so.
Oh man,
I mean, to be fair to LCS, LEC is not.
It's not any better. Oh my gosh, I something about LEC, man. I
tried watching a bit this season, but I can't. That region, it's. I mean, you might get hate in the comments, but I mean, that is like that is an actual clown fiesta. Watching like Vitality play Giants, you're just like, Immortals would 3-0 both those teams. Like, what are we?
It's gone to that point. And people already hate me for saying this. I've been made known to say, like, LEC is just the one team region. Just G2, everyone else, you know, maybe Fnatic, but I don't know. That there's something so off about it. And I also think them switching to a really, like, a condensed and shortened split doesn't help the players develop.
Oh, it's so. They might have the worst format I've ever seen for a competitive, like, that for competitiveness. Like, you play a single best of one round robin, and then you play like a couple best of twos, and then someone's the winner.
Yeah,
it's like what are we? And what's even funnier is that they're about to play summer playoffs, but those aren't the actual playoffs. They're going to play summer playoffs, and they're going to play season final.
Yeah.
So your summer playoff doesn't really matter unless you're a fringe playoff team. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I think even though they suck, no, actually it's a lie. If Heretics didn't make playoffs, I think Vitality would have made playoffs.
Yeah. They lost that last the tiebreaker. Right? It was Vitality and
Yes,
Rogue.
They are seventh. They have 115 points. SK has 125, so SK just kicked them out. If Team Heretics had not made playoffs, Vitality would have 100% made playoffs.
Oh my gosh, it did not.
That would have been the worst timeline. The absolute worst timeline. Also, SK barely got in, too, because they made playoffs in spring but got bounced first round. But that those extra 35 points basically
just helped them vault them over. And they are an exciting team, at least for this split, and they look like it. Vitality, I've seen three different iterations in just this one year. Yeah. Three different iterations, and still they don't do well. They have good names, but there's something fundamentally broken about that org.
Yeah, I mean, this split, people will talk about it for a long time, but it's Mac and Pad coming in, kicking Daglis and bringing in Linsys. And Linsys just...
He's not ready.
He's supposed to be a power farming carry jungler, and they have him on Sejuani duty. So who the hell knows, right? So, I mean, he was on a team once with Takui.
I guess there's that.
I don't know. It's really Vitality is just an org that has incompetent management. They're the Dignitas of
basically. Wow. Well, man, it's been great to kind of hear like your fandom, and you know, you live through history, and you have a very unconventional way of getting back into esports. And it's like one of the questions that, you know, we'll wrestle with. I'll have you on again, man. We need to talk more about like the future of the
esports. Sure.
One of the things is the path to becoming a fan in LCS or any of the league esports right now. It's going to be so much different than how we started, how we got into it right now. Do you think it's something that, you know, replicable? Do we need to come up with some different ideas? Because, you know, one of the major issues right now is attracting new fans, attracting new eyes to this, to the esports, league esports especially.
So Riot is doing something smart next year. If you read their announcement for the Americas region change, which I know that's a whole separate issue, but one thing they did say in there is that they are increasing the number of sponsored watch parties they're doing. So for anyone who's not been to one, a watch party is basically they find an event organizer, or more likely an event organizer applies to Riot.
Yeah.
If they get accepted, Riot usually sends them enough money to pay for a venue. Generally, it might be like, you know, like a Buffalo Wild Wings or
maybe a sports bar,
a small theater where you can like not like a movie theater, but like a play theater, like, oh, you play theater, a small theater. And then you put you put a projector up with a thing there to stream it. And then that person, you know, invites people to come to it. Typically, there might be like a $5 entry fee, or it's no entry fee, but you're expected to, you know, buy drinks or buy your own food, not just come by and sit and watch for free. But it's a way to allow local grassroots growth of the sport. And that's, to me, that's important. I live in Wisconsin, and there is a few avenues that, now there's no need for a quote unquote grassroots Packers fandom growth, because obviously the Packers are like one of the biggest sports franchises in the world. But what a lot of local sports bars do is for a lot of other towns that are far away from Green Bay is they'll do the bar bus. I don't know if you've heard about this where you live, but essentially like a bar will buy a bunch of tickets from the Packers, and then they'll resell those to you, usually at the same price. But then they will allow you to get free ride on their bus from their location to Green Bay. You watch the game, you go back on that bus, and they'll drive you back home. But while you're there, the bus serves alcohol.
Ace.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's how they make their money, right? The whole time they're selling liquor to people.
Right.
And that's totally legal as long as the driver isn't drinking as well.
He's drinking.
It's just like buying a drink on an airplane. Same concept. Just that it's in a bus instead. So that is important because it allows people who would never get to experience a Packers game to be able to experience it. It might be a little bit pricey, but at least they can do it in an environment they might not have realized they could do it before, right? Because many people don't want to go through the hassle of driving yourself all the way to a place an hour away, you know, and then having to find your way back. Maybe you're drunk or whatever too. Just the idea of having a safe travel back is important too. But the same kind of concept I think applies to watch parties. A lot of people might actually actively play league. but don't know or don't care that esports exists. Mm-hmm. But if they see a flyer on their local bulletin board that says, you know, LCS week two, day two, watch party, come watch, you know, these four teams play, you know, the two games, especially usually the event organizer might even provide free drinks like pop or like, you know, some snacky foods like cheese and crackers, just to get people through the door. Right. Oh,
they could do the pagoda. Are they still the sponsor of LCS?
They are, yes, for the pauses, which is really weird that there'd be an official pause sponsor. Because theoretically, Riot, you would hope, would never pause.
Because the
goal would be that your game is so well made that there are zero pauses ever. But I guess
uninterrupted. But you know what? LEC has their KitKat break. You know, it works.
It's so weird. But so I mean, something like that too. Yeah, definitely. Like Pagoda sends out a catering toolkit or a catering voucher for a local place nearby or whatever. Right. So like. They normally only do that for just Worlds and maybe the LCS summer road trip. Those are the two, like, for instance, I went to the 2022 finals in Chicago. And I know that Immortals was doing a watch party for the finals. So if you didn't have tickets to the Chicago I didn't go, but I know some people who did. So I know that Revenge was there. I think Nightshare was there. I think maybe another player was there, and a couple of the management was there. And I was told that there was like 10 to 20 fans that were really there. But that kind of intimate relationship when you're watching a pro game could be a lot more empowering as a fan than like being in a stadium. You can't replicate the energy, like the hype and the energy in the arena. But sometimes you want to watch a game and have an intellectual conversation with somebody. You can't really do that in an arena when everyone's screaming all the time, you know? So the watch parties are always nice for me, at least, because you can kind of meet some new fans, meet some new faces, you know, exchange league usernames to play games with people. And again, usually you can, especially if it's around the area, you can meet some pros maybe or teams. But yeah, so in terms of growing fandom, I think Riot allowing more watch parties in 2025 will be incredibly important to the growth. If they didn't do that, then yeah, I would say I would be scared because League is getting more complicated every year.
Correct.
Because there's more champions every year. The mechanics of League now are probably easier than in the olden days. I mean, back then you just had Dragon and Baron and stuff, I know, but like, I feel like the game is easier because it's easier to end games. So like, the games are going to end generally.
Right. You don't want it to drag on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was harder, in quotes, back in the day because there wasn't a clear avenue of ending the game. Like, if you trade a team, you know, 3-for-3, and then your two dudes are able to kill Dragon, and they had to back off, Dragon only gave you gold. You don't really have an avenue to push that advantage. Or advantage, if you traded, you traded 3-for-5, it's, you know, two of you versus none of them. There's unless it's like, you know, a 2-minute death timer, you really don't have a way to just go, okay, we're in the game now.
Yeah.
You know, unless their base was completely destroyed.
Right.
But nowadays, it's pretty clear, you know, you lane, you know, at 6 minutes, 8 minutes or whatever, the support in the top should roam, get grubs, you know, or the support mid roam and you Dragon when they're doing grubs, and then you do that again when grubs spawn, and you do it again when Herald spawns, and then you do it again when Baron spawns, and then some team wins and some team loses. It's pretty much how every game goes.
Yes.
and then in between that, the jungler and the support are ganking. Like, that's the like, yes, there's caveats, but like, every game of League, like, start to finish, it's pretty well like you're on a train track, basically. Okay, grub time. Okay, Herald time. Okay, Baron time, kind of thing, depending on how good or, you know, ahead or behind you are in a team.
Yeah.
But the issue is that there's so many champions to learn the matchups for in your given role that is, it's a knowledge gap, not a mechanics gap.
Yes.
That was originally the whole reason why League was more popular than Dota and Dota 2. Because Dota 2 was the knowledge gap game, right? Mm-hmm. You not only had to learn the matchup for every hero, because especially in Dota 2, there are no like lane assignments. Mm-hmm. People just go, I mean, whatever. Now it's different. There are pretty much clear, like, this hero goes here kind of thing. But it's more open in Dota for what hero goes to where. Like, there isn't a jungler role in Dota. I mean, there can be heroes who jungle, but you don't have a jungler every game. In fact, probably less than 10% of games, there's an actual jungler in quotes. So that was a knowledge gap game. You had to learn a bajillion, not only a bajillion matchups, but then you had every item had an active. So you had to learn what every item did. Their stat system was super weird. The mechanics were weird. Like, even to this day, they had this weird mechanic where if a turret is attacking you, an ally can attack you. And then they take the turret aggro.
Oh my! Oh wow! Oh, that's such a weird wow.
Yeah, it's like a there's the turret mechanics in that game are absolutely wild. You could I recommend looking at the wiki about them. It's like you can force, because what happens is, unlike League, well, kind of like League. So the turret in League rechanges its target. Dynamically, like constantly, like
wow.
But the turret in Dota only changes its target once the shot's been fired.
Right. Okay. I see.
And then it'll change its target. So once the shot's fired at you, then you can do some weird tricks to make the turret re-aggro.
Mm-hmm.
It can even re-aggro minions sometimes. While you're dying,
while it was being targeted at a hero. Wow.
Yeah. It's so weird. Like I said, the mechanics really weird. So. But now, like I was saying, like nowadays, it's the inverse. Like Dota has become, especially I don't know if you saw, but they did a huge rework this year on the game.
I did not.
Yeah, there's a huge patch. I think it's patch like 7. Whatever. But they pretty much went through and redesigned every hero in the game.
Oh wow!
That's every hero has every hero has a passive now. And then you have like some kind of unique active that you can choose one or the other. Like it's kind of like they made it more League-like, to be honest with you, but they kind of made it more, they gave it the Dota flair. So every hero has two passives they can choose from, actually.
Oh.
And then there's the talent system they have that they took from Heroes of the Storm. So that still exists too.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's and then while they were doing that, they touched up, like I said, pretty much every hero that like they needed, like that had like outdated kits or outdated mechanics. They went and they did little tweaks on all of them. So that game is a lot more polished and finished. And it feels like if you play Dota, you know, in fact, you can, as an example, Sneaky recently got in Dota like last year, I think. And his plan was to get good at it. Like, oh, how long will it take me to get good at it? And he said it took him significantly shorter time to get good at Dota than he remembers getting good at League. Now, granted, he already has like some base MOBA knowledge compared to like a fresh new to the genre person. But I do think that League has a much higher knowledge gap than Dota does. And actually more than pretty much any game you can think of that's out there. So that problem is only going to increase because, unlike Dota, Riot is pumping out 2 to 4 champions a year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, crazy. And every new champion, especially, unfortunately, for bot lane, because if you really want to be good at bot lane, you can't just learn your AD carry matchup. You have to also learn support matchup, right. Support AD carry matchup, AD carry support matchup. Like you have to learn even more. And then usually, if you're a mid or top laner, you should know your jungle matchup too. That way you know gank timers, roam timers, where you should be on the map during what. Like you need to know clear speeds for junglers to play better. So yeah, I do think that if Riot doesn't do what they're doing next year, the game was going to hit a plateau. I mean, in NA, it's 100% hit a plateau. I don't think we're going to get a noticeable increase in fans, but I think that there's a good chance that we might see some increase in fans, or at the very least, the fans we have don't drop off.
Yeah, that's been
if you can just maintain,
and
I think that's fine.
There's this delicate balance too, right? You have to maintain the current fans, which, you know, it's a generation of its own. Like, you and I are, you know, as we grow up with this game, we're also life changes happen, and, you know, our time is divided, but you also are trying to attract the new incoming young adults, or maybe even teens. And you have to basically make it interesting across the generations. So that is a big undertaking. I understand the complexity of it. It's just, it felt like the past, they didn't do it well in the past, like, 4 years when they had that great opportunity. Like, COVID brought a lot of people in. That was because there was nothing else to watch.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, Riot, I mean, we can get into the tech bro nature of Riot Games itself, mm-hmm. where a lot of their decisions are based on the incredibly insulated bubble of mm-hmm. San Francisco and I think they're in Santa Clara, I believe, or Santa Monica, whatever, you know, all those mm-hmm. Bay Area towns. They have an extremely distorted view of, like, the world. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's a right or wrong view, but for instance, as we all know, for some unknown reason that no man will ever know, last split, they moved the LCS to weekdays at noon.
Yeah.
And that was universally panned, not just mm-hmm. by NA fans, but even, like, I believe Faker was mm-hmm. commenting and saying, they're playing at noon? Is the LCS in trouble? Like, if like, the guy that you're about to make a legend skin mm-hmm. for is confused by your executive decisions. Now, they've came out and said, and everyone knows this, or at least they don't know, mm-hmm. you can look it up, and they've said the reason they made this change was their data says that general Twitch viewership, not mm-hmm. specific to League, but general Twitch. Peak Twitch viewerships is at noon Pacific, which might be true. You know mm-hmm. what? I can't tell them they're wrong, but mm-hmm. here's the truth. There is no way that Joe Smith watching mm-hmm. Pokimane at his desk during his lunch break is going to suddenly watch the LCS because it's on. He's going to keep watching Pokimane. All right. Mm-hmm. This is how, you know, the people who watch Amaranth or whoever or Co-Carnage or mm-hmm. all those guys, they're not going to suddenly go, oh, wait, the LCS is on? Okay. Let me just stop watching who I've been sub to for 5 years to watch the LCS now because it's on in my lunch break. And it was, I mean, literally everyone could see this coming a mile away. But because they're in that very specific tech bro mindset where, oh, maybe the first split will be bad, but it'll average itself out eventually as, you know, we get recommended to people on the Twitch main page. Nope, it didn't. Nope. It got worse every week. Viewership mm-hmm. kept going down every single week because turns out majority of your fan base doesn't work a job where you can work from home or mm-hmm. watch a Twitch stream on the sides on your second monitor. And in fact, I would argue probably at this point, most of the LCS fans probably work 9-to-5s outside an office.
Correct. You know? Correct. Those are the fans that maybe had that time during college, but they are out of college.
Well, you know, they're used to at Riot Games, you have your third monitor, and that's when you have your, you know, you have your, you know, you have your hobby game or mm-hmm. your streams or your YouTube video playing, and they think that everyone's like that. Mm. They don't really have a pulse on the fans in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Indianapolis, Indiana, you know, mm-hmm. or Scranton, Ohio, or Nebraska, Boise, Idaho. They're not there talking to those people.
No.
They're only talking to the fans that are in a very small cluster of Bay City mm-hmm. cities. You know, it's kind of like where their headspace is. So, like, that's really where the LCS has failed, is because, unfortunately, the company that owns the LCS refuses to, one, use third parties in other areas of the country to run better shows, or at least to expand fanship, which, like I said earlier, doing more road shows is good and shows their willingness to attempt down that route. But the other thing is that they just they refuse that, and then they refuse to listen to, well, until Mark Z.
Right.
They refuse to listen to fan feedback. Correct. Period. If we say anything, they knew that they were the correct ones. No, these fans don't know anything about running an esport or,
right,
you know,
right,
they don't know nothing. You know, we're the ones who have the right idea, and you just trust us, and then you'll just deal with it.
Exactly. It you, even though they don't come right out and say it, they keep saying, oh, we're listening and we're doing, you can just feel that disconnect between the decision makers and what viewers actually are asking for. Now, this year has been much better, for sure. Yeah,
for sure.
And I love it. I love the energy. There is, like, you know, changes, but we know these changes are not going to last because the Americas is coming. But they're headed in the right direction, so overall, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at sentiment so far, even LEC fans have been admitting that the LCS is a much better production right now. Like, not only is our content better, our games are better, our on-air talent seems to be better too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a, this feels like, if you remember when the EU LCS transitioned to LEC and became its own brand, the LEC people viewed as a better product than the LCS.
Yes.
But it seems like, and this is obviously because the LEC fired, like,
oh my gosh, that riot, you know, what's it called? They had to let go of, like, what, 10% of their, and it really affected the LEC majorly from the first day on. It's like,
yeah,
wow.
I mean, was it the very first weekend where they had that the stream crashed for
stream,
like,
stream crash, the
15 minutes
server was like not all over the place, the UI was
it was awful. But yeah, but not only that, but I mean the gameplay is worse, but also the casters and the content producers aren't finding narratives anymore.
Yeah.
Now, this started before this year, but correct, as I'm sure you can remember, for the for like all of, I think I want to say all of 2023, if not the beginning of 2022 summer, through most of last year, it all started when Mad Lions won that first split.
Yeah.
And then it was New Kings versus Old Kings.
Old Kings, yeah.
For like three splits straight, and that was the only thing they had. That was it.
Yep.
It was so weird.
Every single, like, story in week, it was about that.
Yeah, it was like, all right, guys, Mad won the second split in a row. Are they the New Kings, or will the Old Kings dethrone them? Let's find out. It's like, think of something, man. Like,
man, I didn't even realize that.
That was the beginning of the end. I mean, the beginning of the downfall. I think that was when they just, I don't know if they even naturally lost production back then, like some people might have left or whatever, but it felt like they just have ran out of, like, narrative writers to help the casters prep, like, ideas and stories and stuff. It's kind of just feels like week to week, especially now, they're just kind of, you know, shooting from the hip and just figuring stuff out.
Oh yeah, there were moments where, like, it's within 3 weeks the split is over. You can't get connected to these players because they are being cycled out, like, you know, just crazy. Like, you've seen new players coming in. They're importing instead of using what they prided themselves to be one of the best, like, you know, tier two to tier one system. It's just terrible.
Yeah, there's actually a direct comparison you can make. So last split was the first time FlyQuest was first in the regular season in org history.
Mm.
And running up to that week, in the pre, like, game, you know, analyst desk, and then once the games were over, where Fly won and they locked in first place, casters in the desk actually talked about it, like how monumental it was for this org to, especially coming off of the disastrous 2023, to bounce back, come in and finish first in regular season, first seed locked, etc. This summer, this is the first time SK has ever been first. And no one did nothing. It was just like, oh, at the end of the game, oh, and for the first time, SK is first. There was no pre-desk talking about SK locking in first, especially, again, after their disastrous first two splits. There's no post-desk about SK being first. They went right into, if you remember, because they had Oduwamne and some other player, I don't know who it was, they had Oduwamne and some other player on the desk, and they went right into predictions for the playoffs.
They
didn't even do like a post regular season like talk, like, okay, guys, here are the standings, how are we feeling about the fact that SK got their first place in their org history. It was just immediately in fact the first thing they asked Odo was, what's the most likely upset? It was like, we're not even gonna. And of course, he was on Giant X this year, so he said, "Oh, well, of course, Giant X is going to upset." And I think they're playing like G2 or something or SK, so of course they're not going to. But
man, it's like, just...
yeah, like even their on-air like narratives are just. I mean, it's like you said, there's not enough time to generate talk, and you can like the fact that those two things happened. Back-to-back splits, like one team did it in LCS and it was a big deal, then it does it in LEC and no one cares. Especially because SK is a legacy org. Like, SK has been around since season one in the LEC. Like, you'd think there'd be like a bigger care about this org finally, you know, getting that hump off their back kind of thing, you know, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, and that I hope, I mean, it's the league esports world can only benefit if all, you know, everyone is having feeling some success. But you know what? We'll just enjoy this moment right now where the LCS product is better. And so it's another victory for LCS. Yeah, so as we kind of wind down today's show, I know we're having a major break in the LCS and we have to find some things to fill our time. Some people might watch that tournament. I haven't decided myself. So what are you going to do, Red, for the 19 days that we don't have an LCS game?
I got nothing going on, really. I play World of Warcraft. I'm coming back to it, actually. I took an extended break, and now I'm going to be trying to go hard in the new expansion. I'm going to try to get cutting edge early. Like, there are different kinds of high-end WoW guilds. There's like, you know, the world first WoW guilds, and there's like the Hall of Fame WoW guilds, and then there's like the tier after that, and that's the tier I'm trying to get back into. So this week and next week I have to work on gearing my character to be able to play with the people I'm trying to play with. That's what I'm doing.
All right, hey, no better time to do it than now with that break.
And then there's other crap too, like that new gacha game comes out July 4th. I think I've heard about it. What's it called? Zenless Zone Zero.
Oh my gosh!
It's a new game from miHoYo, people who made people who made Genshin and Honkai Star Rail.
Yeah,
it comes out the 4th. It's already out in China. It's coming to global.
It's coming to global. Zenless Zone Zero. Okay.
Yeah. So I thought it's an urban game, and I think it's an RPG like Honkai Star Rail. So I thought, well, you know, it comes out the 4th. You know, we're all off. I'll give it a try. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
sure.
Why not? Just give it a try. Just have some fun.
Figure something out. miHoYo's been doing well. I have a Genshin. Have not touched that in a while.
I played Genshin on launch and then I stopped because, and same reason I stopped to Honkai Star Rail too, is that the first wall you hit is so extreme. I was like, nah, I'm good, man.
After that, it feels like grind for no reason.
For some people though, they want just log on, do your 5 dailies.
Right.
Yeah. And you're not really getting a reward, but they don't need the reward is like 2 months from now. But to them, that's enough.
As
opposed to some people, well, because me, I'm MMO coded, right? So I need my daily reward.
You need just
I need something.
It needs to be.
I need
something.
Daily growth of my character, or it feels like I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
Whereas, gacha gamers have been programmed that oh, you play every single day because 6 months from now, a banner might have the character you want.
Correct. You and need that, to.
That's how their brains work, which is not how my brain works at all.
It got me for a first year, though, I have to say. But then it just really, it feels like a chore at this point.
Yeah. And of course, the biggest thing for me was that it might be different now, but on Genshin release, you could do multiplayer, but you couldn't do main story quests multiplayer.
Correct.
And I was told by my friends, oh, come play, it's multiplayer. I was like, oh, cool, we'll play together.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all found out, oh, you can do multiplayer, but you cannot progress. If you join someone else's world and they're on the main quest, you could help them, but you don't get the same progress.
No. Yes.
So it's like, oh, well, that just defeats the whole purpose. Like, that's so boring.
It's become a single player RPG at that point.
Yeah.
Just that multiplayer feature just thrown in. Not much thoughts giving. But yeah. All right. Well, it's been amazing. I really enjoyed this time. I definitely will have you back. We have a lot to discuss during this break, even
of course.
To have talk LCS. So thank you so much, Red. And people, listeners, you know, welcome to join in the conversation. We want to hear your voice. We want to know your path to League Esports, LCS fan, player fan, whatever it is. Whatever you choose to be, just be a fan.